Finance for Future, the podcast of the Mindful Finance Institute, moderated by Friedhelm Boschert and Clemens Höppner.
Yeah, so it's only a few years ago that nobody was talking about sustainable finance in the business life of the banks. And in the meantime, we've got a vast number of regulations, of papers, and of course, talks about that.
So we invited a guest. We were, of course, very interested in that topic as well. We thought, who would be the right person to talk to it? And in today's podcast, we found somebody who's really an expert and one of the few people who started thinking sustainable finance years ago already. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Mindful Finance Institute. My name is Friedhelm Boschert, and together with Clemens Höppner, we are talking today to Hakan Lucius, Head of Corporate Responsibility and Civil Society at European Investment Bank, and Professor of Finance in Luxembourg, Frankfurt, and Paris. Great to have you here, and thank you for participating. Would you introduce yourself briefly?
Thank you, Friedhelm. Thank you, Clemens. It's great to be together with you. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm Hakan. I head corporate responsibility, as you said, at the European Investment Bank, at the Bank of the European Union. And it's a particular privilege and honor for me to head this function because the bank has a public mission with a financing volume that is very significant, so we really can make a difference on the ground. Personally, I am an engineer who has then become a financier with a PhD in economics, and bringing all these three aspects together, I really feel very, very passionate about sustainability, which I have now integrated more and more into the economics and finance thinking, which I share and love to share with my students, as you said, in universities in Paris, Frankfurt, and also in Luxembourg.
Thanks.
Thank you, Hakan. We have a question which is not such a surprise to you anymore, but a bit personal. If you think about a dream, and if you were to finish the sentence, I have a dream, what is it?
I have a dream which I would like to make come true. And that is to make sustainability a standard way of conducting business, a standard way of our economic actions, to make this part of our curricula of economic thinking. That really would be my dream. That would be great.
Sounds great. Hakan, I think we have a lot of beginners in our audience and people who started just looking into that topic. And could you provide them with a short overview? What is sustainable finance and why now everybody is talking about that these days?
Well, that's a very good question. Thank you. I mean, indeed, if you talk about finance, finance is cash, it's money. You lend it, you borrow it. It goes out, it comes in. But what's the sustainability part? Well, the sustainability part is what happens with your money. When you give it, when you finance something, what are the environmental effects? What are the social effects? What are you mindful of the impact you're having with your money? And because if you do, then suddenly you can have a much more different approach and impact in your business activity that goes beyond just giving money and getting it back. Mm-hmm. And why is it today, your second part of the question, mm-hmm. Friedhelm, why is it so important today? Well, because we're in a world which is facing challenges which are unprecedented. Sustainability challenges from climate to biodiversity loss, you name it. It's a long list. And finance has a part in it. You have to be aware and mindful of what it is that you're financing and what the connections are to those challenges that we have. And if you do that sustainability connection with finance, you have sustainable finance.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. There's a big question, particularly if you look at movements like Fridays for Future and so on. And that is, why don't you just focus on environment? If this planet, if the biodiversity is not there anymore, if the climate gets too hot, then we're in a very catastrophic situation. Why do you include social and governance issues as well in ESG.
Indeed, you said ESG, environment, social, governance, often used as a synonym for sustainability. And it's true that sustainability often is understood as sustainability from an environmental point of view, from a nature perspective, from a resource perspective. But it goes hand in hand with the people. You can't disconnect environment and the people. That's why you have to look at E and S, on environment and social, together. But there was also a third pillar, which you said, the G, the governance. And if you are an economic actor, a company or a bank, and your actions have an environmental and social impact, well, those are external aspects which are outside of your organization. But the G, the governance part, is very much internal. And it's your G, your governance part, which has to take into account the environmental and social aspects. So all three go hand in hand. How well are you managing your external E and S? Of course, your internal as well, but it's that part which is management, which is G, which determines the E and S's. And if you put all three together, you have this ESG aspects, which we are talking much about. And it's not only E. That in itself is a huge challenge, but it must be seen together with the people, social, and with the governance to be successful. And that's why I think it's very important to look at them always holistically and all three together.
Yeah. Hakan, you mentioned the actors in financial institutions. So let's stay with them very short because they have to consider new criteria when making financial decisions. They have to consider ESG and SDG and PRI criteria, and so making decisions that are different from what they did in the past. Could you give us some examples from your own, from your bank, or what you know about other, how financial decision making changed and how it will change even, and give some examples maybe.
It is indeed changing because the challenges are there. And I want to give you the example on how we do it at the European Investment Bank and how we go about decision-making from a sustainability point of view. So the sustainability aspect, which complements the banking aspect, it has to be bankable, but it also has to be sustainable, go together. And when we look at the sustainability aspect, you know, how do we do that? We do it in three steps. The first step is an exclusion list, certain things we do not do. No matter what, we will not be active in those sectors. Mm. So that's straightforward, that is easy to understand, it's clear, we don't do that. Then we come to the second aspect, because in all the things we do, certain standards have to be fulfilled, certain environmental and social standards. And we have 10 environmental and social standards, which encompass all the aspects of environmental and social norms and minima, which we want to be fulfilled and complied with. It's a baseline. You can't go below those. So you have excluded, first step, you've complied with the standards, second step. But third step, and I think that's the most important one, you have to have an investment that has an overall positive contribution. What does that mean? Let me give you an example. You can build a road, a normal road, not a toll road. Just imagine a simple road. How do I know if this has a positive contribution? Well, I have to look at the effects of that. I have to know whether that road will bring benefits to people. What will be the benefits and what will be the downsides? What will be, say, for example, time savings, because you might have less congestion? What will be a drop in accidents, less people injured, maybe less fatalities? What are the positives also in terms of engine maintenance and operating costs, you know, overall? But there will be downsides as well. For example, the most obvious is when you drive more, you will have more emissions because most of the cars today are combustion engines and they emit greenhouse gases. So that's a downside. And we capture that. We say, okay, we are emitting. What is the cost of emitting? and what are the benefits to people. And we bring that into an economic analysis, not a financial, an economic analysis. And in this third step, we try to capture whether this project has a benefit to society as a whole. And so we have excluded certain things we never do. In all the things we do, the standards have to be fulfilled. And even if they are fulfilled, does it have an overall positive societal benefit? So by doing this, you can capture the sustainability dimension and do a sustainability due diligence. It's a lot of work, and it's very sector specific, and you need lots of experts who know their own sectors. You need environmental people, you need social people, you need economists, engineers. I'm perfectly aware of that, and I'm not saying it's easy. Mm-hmm. But this is one way of doing it, and this is how the bank is organized and actually implemented sustainability due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Very close to that, just to add, do you think it's applicable for private banks as well, giving money, giving loans to private companies, to private clients? So do they have to apply the same ideas in decision making?
Oh, absolutely. It's valid for public and private. It doesn't matter who does the investment, but it's important to know what the investment is. So to be able to do what I've just said, you also have to know where your money goes and what it does. You have to know what is the purpose of your funding. You have to have a project. That's why we are project-based. We have a definition of where the money goes to, and then we can do all the three steps which I've just described. So it's not so much on whether this is private or public. It's about what is the investment.
Mm.
And if I may understand your question, maybe from the other side, could the private sector do this as well? Well, of course they could do it if they have a clear knowledge about where their money goes to.
Mm.
If you know that, you can do it. Okay. It's work. Again, I can repeat that. It's not straightforward. But it can be done, of course, both publicly and privately.
Thank you.
If I take this question a bit further and I think about like all the private investors, even foundations or endowments investing in or providing funds for environmental activities, they still go to Wall Street or here in Frankfurt to the asset managers to invest their money. And of course, they expect a profit on that side as well. How do you put that together? The profit making on the one hand and ESG on the other hand?
To me, profit and ESG go hand in hand. And good ESG means good profit. I think long-term success is based on good ESG. If an investor or an economic actor, a company is active, they want to be active on a long-term basis. They don't only want to be here for the next quarter or the next end of year. They want to be around 10 years from today, 20 years from today. Personally, I do not know of any company which says, I don't want to be around in 20 years. They all do want to be around. But the success, the long-term success, depends not only on the cash side, which is absolutely necessary, but it's not sufficient. So it's not only the business part in its strictest sense, it's about what that business has in an environmental and social effect. And if you get those two together and you're mindful of your environmental and social impacts, then you will have success in the long run. And that's why I see both going hand in hand, and I strongly believe that good ESG makes good business sense and creates long-term outperformance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes these decision makers speak about simply managing climate risks. So, and this sounds to the public and to the ordinary people, sounds like they care for the environment. But does it just mean fighting climate change to preserve and to guarantee their assets and their loans, which are out? So we do mean two very different things when you speak about climate risks and managing climate risks. The one want to save the planet, the other want to save their assets.
I think there are two aspects here. On the one side, there is saving the planet, meaning in terms of climate, stopping greenhouse gas emissions, which is an action that has to be taken. And then on the other side, you also have the risks, which are beyond just emitting, because you may be exposed to risks even if you don't emit. Just think of installations that are on a coastline which will be hit by sea level rises, a physical risk. And that installation need not have to do anything with the oil industry or coal or gas or anything. Just a simple hotel or any kind of facility which is unrelated to the fossil fuel industry just may have a risk, say a sea level rise risk, to take a very obvious example. So on the one hand, it's about, as you say, saving the client, the climate and the planet by stopping greenhouse gas emissions. But on the other hand, because we already have emitted so much, we are already changing the planet and we are incurring a lot of physical risks. And it's very important today to understand those risks, physical risks, which touch upon us all. So really one has to do both, save the planet and manage the risks.
Okay.
Do you think the management and the leadership of financial institutions is prepared to do both? Because this whole topic is a topic of a big transformation. I mean, there's not the classical approach of running financial institutions. And you have done it in the EIB for quite some time, so you have had this way, this transformation process internally to move to this way of leading the institution. But other institutions did not do that in the past, as far as I would think, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I appreciate the question. Clearly, from the perspective of our institution, there's a public mission. I mean, there's an overarching goal. It's the Bank of the European Union. So it's very much in the DNA to have these concepts and approaches. If you look at other actors, they will all have their own sort of missions and purposes. But what is common to all is that it is the same planet, the same risks, the same challenges we have. So even if in the first actions, in the purpose and mission, you don't have this public mission because you're not publicly held, which is perfectly common and the normal part of our economic activity, you still have a strong responsibility to take into account your economic actions, your environmental and social impact, and basically manage your risks as well. So it is hard to detach it, and I think we're seeing more and more banks, so you were talking about banks, which clearly say, I will not finance coal anymore. I have very clear policies on that. I have to take my responsibilities. And these are investments which are not for the future, very clear. And at the same time, as just Friedhelm touched upon, you have the risk side as well, because even if it's not fossil fuels, you have a risk dimension which will fall upon you no matter what your purpose and what your mission. So there's very clear growing evidence that people are aware of having to manage this dimension more and more. I think it's inescapable.
And this awareness, I think, should comprise everybody who is involved in a particular bank or company. Means all the stakeholders. So it's a matter of culture, of course, which prevails in that company. How can a bank or a corporate unit achieve that to get to a culture of sustainability?
I believe the tone comes from the top. You must have a very clear commitment at the top. That's one of the reasons that organizations like the United Nations Global Compact want from their members a clear statement signed by the CEO. Tone comes from the top. This is absolutely necessary, but it's not sufficient. You must have the organization that follows. The next levels have to buy in and have to implement, and they have to follow suit. So you have really a dimension where you need those two levels. You have the tone from the top, but you also have the organization which actually implements. And if you have the two together, then you can have, and you do have, a very nice culture of integrating these sustainability considerations in the day-to-day business. And that's what it actually is. It's not about business on the one side and sustainability on the other side. Not at all. It's how you conduct your business. And if you conduct it in a mindful way, in a long-term oriented way, that's how you're going to achieve success.
I think you have a dialogue with stakeholders when you're financing, or with the EIB. I think it's obvious that you have stakeholders from the political sphere and public and everybody. So what about this dialogue with the stakeholders? Is it essential for the culture and for the sustainability efforts a company has?
Thank you for touching upon that, because indeed, when we talk about tone from the top and then the implementation, you also have to, in the implementation, be in close contact with your stakeholders. For example, in our case, we have very constant outreaches and an open ear to what our stakeholders tell us. Mm-hmm. And this being close to your stakeholders is very important for businesses, especially now that they're more and more global and, you know, the actions are far away from headquarters. How do I get the feedback from my stakeholders? How do I know what they want? How do I know how my actions actually touch upon them? And by doing that, you actually anticipate the problems of tomorrow. And your decisions of tomorrow are informed today, and you have much better outcomes in your decisions because you actually have listened and you've engaged with your stakeholders. So that really is very important in the second, in this implementation part. Tone from the top, but a very strong implementation which goes hand in hand with your stakeholders and listens to them and takes on board what they are saying. There are multiple examples of this bringing in a lot of success, even bringing new products which are developed, bringing in examples of projects which are avoided, which have been a failure because they have listened to stakeholders, risks that have been avoided, opportunities that have been fulfilled. So that engagement is certainly very, very important because you are not being an actor alone. Mm-hmm. You're together with the people you're affecting and with whom you're in contact.
Mm. Thanks.
You just mentioned decisions for tomorrow. There is a notion that I came across in looking at the First Nations and the North American Native traditions. And they have this notion of for the next seven generations ingrained in their thinking, or people working in that tradition. And it's about how does what we do today impact the next seven generations? Do you think that could ever come into sustainable finance?
I really like that. I had heard about that, and seven generations had really struck me, because if we assume a generation to be around 30 years, seven generations is 210 years. So if I'm making a decision with a decision horizon of 210 years, we're talking of the year 2230. I'm not aware of anyone doing a decision with a horizon of 2230, but I wish they were. Some of our actions we have to be conscious about will have an effect and are having an effect for 2230. To stay with our example of sea level rise, the actions we are doing today are irreversible. The sea levels will be higher also in the 22nd century and in the 23rd century. So that really is a good example, Clemens. I appreciate that. But I think today, if we think of only one generation, meaning 2050, that already is a big success. And I'm quite proud that the EU has said by 2050, we are going to be net zero carbon. We're going to be carbon free. We're going to have net zero emissions. So effectively, this already is, for us, long-term planning. So I'm happy to make decisions for one generation. And I think that already in itself is very, very good.
Yeah, indeed. And in a way, it will affect the seven generations as well, if you think about it.
That's true, it will.
Talking about generations, you're a teacher as well, professor at university. And if you look at the current generation of students who are the future participants in sustainable finance, what makes you hopeful about them?
I'm very positive because I can see the big awareness and the will to action, and I can see the optimism and the necessary dynamism. For me personally, this has been a big motivation to come up and do this teaching, because I didn't have it in my education, and I think it's very important that it's out there today, because it will influence tomorrow's decisions by tomorrow's decision makers, which are educated today. And it's a very clear message. I mean, it's finance for survival, but sustainability for success. And if we get that message across with the positive attitude that I'm seeing throughout my students, I think I am very positive too.
Great wording for the end of our interview. And I think, Hakan, thank you very much for sharing your experience and your ideas on the future of finance and your experience with sustainable finance with us and with our audience. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. I thank you for this opportunity.
You know, Frieda, I'm thinking about this interview with Hakan. What really surprised me was the positive ending of this interview. If you think about all the negative news about climate, biodiversity and all that, and he has been working on that now for years, he still has very positive attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when he talked about the financial decision making, I was really impressed how deep they went when making financial decisions, these three levels he talked about. And this really impressed me.
Let's hope that more and more people in finance take that approach.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed that talk with us and with Hakan.
Finance for Future, the podcast of the Mindful Finance Institute, moderated by Friedhelm Boschert and Clemens Höppner.